Substance. Stories about the stuff that shapes our world.
The fashion industry is absolutely beautiful, economically a powerhouse. It touches the people of the world. And actually, if we could do better, we could do so much better. And that is what's very exciting.
Substance. Fabrics. Fashion. Maybe not the first thing that pops into your head when you hear science podcast. Fashion is self-expression. It's art. It's political. It's how we show our mood and our personality. Whether we care about the latest trends or just throw on whatever's lying around, what we wear shows the world around us who we are. So fashion is human. But fashion is also deeply intertwined with our relationship to sustainability. One reason why? We consume way too much of it. And once those clothes have worn out their welcome, either because of wear and tear or because they're no longer trendy, what do? We toss them. Of course, those trashed clothes don't just disappear. Globally, the vast majority of textiles, according to a Boston Consulting Group report, an estimated 97 million metric tons in 2024 alone end up in a landfill or as environmental pollution. And all the resources and energy that went into making those textiles end up there too.
The biggest issues of the fashion industry are obviously that all the clothes that you're wearing, from cotton, natural synthetics, polyester, leathers, however you make them, basically they make a negative environmental impact.
That's Christina Dean, a world-renowned expert on fashion and sustainability. For nearly two decades, she's headed the Hong Kong-based nonprofit Redress, whose aim is to transform the world's relationship to fashion. And I'm Joe Hansen, and this is Substance, a podcast about the discoveries and innovations in chemistry and beyond, helping us build a sustainable society for the future. In short, we tell stories about stuff that shapes our world. In this episode, we're talking fashion, an industry that has the potential not only to transform our relationship with the environment, but also the lives of billions of people around the world.
The fashion industry is a bit of a beast, but it's a beautiful beast because I don't want to be down on it. It's an industry that I find beautiful beyond belief. Because why? Because you've got incredible creatives, entrepreneurs, family-owned businesses, publicly listed. And so it's beautiful. It's creative. It's expressive. It's emotional. In thinking about the high-level benefits of this fashion industry that ties in with its economic impact is the fact that the fashion industry can do so much good and bad, right? We've done the bad bit, but it can do so much good.
The fashion industry touches commerce and textile manufacturing, but also agriculture, energy, even sanitation. The United Nations has a series of sustainable development goals to help improve our relationship with the planet, from improving water availability to sanitation, to increasing biodiversity and preserving and championing human rights. Christina believes that because fashion has its hands in so many different industries, if we improve our relationship to fashion, there will be knock-on effects all the way down the chain.
Substance.
Christina began her career back in London, working about as far away from fashion as you can get.
I was a dentist, which was both a blessing and a curse in many ways. The blessing was that I've had quite a rigorous science background, and I've also had a lot of experience dealing with tricky people, that being patients. So I did take a lot from my dental career. However, I actually just didn't enjoy it. And that was fundamentally the reason why I sort of hung up my dental drills and went and retrained as a journalist.
Christina moved to Hong Kong in 2005 and began working as a freelance journalist, writing for trade publications and about topics that interested her.
The great thing about being a journalist is you can just write about whatever you win a commission for. And so I wrote about various topics, but what I kept landing back on was public health and pollution.
As a journalist, Christina saw firsthand fashion's negative environmental impacts. And in 2007, it drove her to act. That year, she founded Redress. The story that nudged her over the edge wasn't one on the fashion industry. It was a story she wrote about herself.
What really happened was I wrote about my own personal transformation to try to be more ethical. I then realized I was completely hypocritical and useless. And it was that matched with the data around pollution, exports, water pollution, that made me think, holy, you know what? This is a dire situation where, you know, as a relatively educated person, I'm not really doing anything personally to resolve, reduce my own personal impact. And so that's the emotional response was a personal one, actually.
Christina was angry about what she'd been seeing as a journalist reporting on fashion. She was also angry at herself and her own relationship to fashion and clothes. So she decided to do something about it.
Well, I was actually out with my now ex-husband and we were having a date night and I was telling him, you know, we were just chatting about work and stuff. And I decided then that I would do it. And I really said to him, I'm going to do this and, you know, it's going to be ugly because I hadn't got a clue what I was doing. And it probably was very ugly. But how I actually did it, you know, it was so easy. And I'll often say that anyone can set up an organization. It's very, very, very easy. If you've got a belly load of determination, I'm going to say anyone can do it. The challenge is actually growing it, sustaining it, improving it. That is the bit that's very challenging.
Christina knew that she wanted to make a difference. She wanted to make fashion more sustainable. But part of the challenge was figuring out what that even meant. That's because sustainability means different things to different people, which can be a major challenge when you want to make concrete change in a complex industry like fashion.
About 15 years ago, I was at a conference. I can't remember the guy's name who spoke, so forgive me to him because he said this. He said that there were and are about 60 definitions of sustainability. And he said there's only one person or one thing in the whole wide world that knows what the actual definition is. And we were all on the edge of our seats going, who, what, where, you know, is it the Oxford Dictionary? But actually, it's the planet. So the definition that we use is that sustainability is the ability to maintain the needs of today without damaging the needs of the future. The problem with that terminology of sustainability is no one except the planet really knows what it actually means.
Fast forward to 2026, nearly two decades after Christina sat down to dinner with a dream. The organization she founded is pushing for one specific definition of sustainability.
Bearing in mind that sustainability needs to touch environmental, social, and the economic. And you can't do one without it considering the impact on the other two. And so how I would answer that in practice is I would actually say, because I'm a circular nerd, and this is not necessarily the answer that other people would give you, but I think if people are trying to understand what is sustainability, I would jump into the more granular and say, how can we make something more circular economy?
If you listen to episode 3 about plastics, you've heard the term circular economy before. At its core, a circular economy makes sure that at the end of their use life, materials don't end up as waste, whether they're plastics, like we talked about in episode 3, or the textiles used by the fashion industry. In a circular economy, those materials are reused over and over again.
Truly speaking, if you want to get really nitpicky about this, circularity in the fashion industry really is a environmental only measured system. So I believe I'm really right in saying that's like fundamentally a circular economy is really a measure of the circulation of materials.
Those ideas now define the mission of Redress.
Redress's mission is to catalyze the circular economy by educating designers and consumers about circular fashion design and more responsible use behaviors in order to reduce clothing's negative environmental impact.
However, Christina says that the difficulty in defining sustainability meant that when she first started the organization, she wasn't quite sure what she was going to achieve with all this advocacy.
In the very early days, I said, I'm going to start an organization that's going to promote sustainable fashion. And then 2 years later, we would do a really big project with the United Nations in Geneva. And I thought, you know, wow, I've really landed here. Here we are at the UN. It sounds so glitzy and powerful. And I was like, whoa, I can't believe it. The problem was that we were promoting sustainable fashion, which is means something different to everyone, from the materials, the social, the cooperatives, women's craft, biodiversity, sourcing, waste reduction, recycling. It means so much. And actually, I think it was the FT picked up on our press release, and rightfully it was ripped to shreds, meaning, you know, does this, I think the kind of the argument was, oh, some sustainable fashion show at the United Nations was done, and the definition of sustainability was, you know, as sustainable as possible.
The FT is the Financial Times, a premier British magazine. Christina realized that the article about redress was right, but she didn't give up and close down the organization. She'd already been thinking about how if she wanted to really make a difference, she needed a real goal, something that she could point to and say, we are going to change this.
It wasn't the FT's article about our project that changed my mind. It was myself that changed my mind, meaning I don't really understand what sustainable fashion means, because it means so many things in different parts of the world. Like what happens in Bolivia is very different than what happens in China in terms of the supply chain, etc. So that is why we then changed our mission in 2009 to be waste reduction. No one's going to argue against that. And also very much in an Asia-China context, we're exporting global textiles and apparel for the world. To reduce waste is like literally, I mean, obvious as hell. And then more recently, we've changed the mission to accelerate circularity, which is waste reduction. It's just packaged a little bit more concurrently with more complex thinking about systems and fashion industry.
Fashion is actually an industry where the solutions for circularity already exist. In theory, if not so much in implementation.
Circular fashion comes up on all the panels and all the conferences, and everyone's talking about circularity and isn't it so important? Yes, yes, yes. However, only 0.3% of the global textile industry is actually circular. And I'm no mathematician, but I'm going to tell you that that's absolutely useless.
The problem is that if you think of the fashion industry like a ship, maybe a container ship, packed full of fast fashion hauls for influencers to present on social media, well, it's not a ship that's easy to turn around. There are so many different drivers steering the ship, like the consumer who impulse purchases a blazer online, to the clothing manufacturer who actually put it together, to the designer who chose that blazer's cut and materials, to the textile manufacturer and the companies who provide the raw material. To change fashion, all of those drivers need to be steering in the same direction.
Given the diabolical situation that we're in terms of waste, environment, consumption, growth, all the statistics, the tension is amongst us all.
There's just no question that since the start of the 21st century, the ship has been driving in fully the wrong direction, in part due to the demands of, well, this is awkward, us. You and me, the people wearing the fashion.
The majority of the fashion industry is sourcing, creating raw materials which operate negative on the environment, full stop. And therefore, the problem that we've obviously seen, and it's happened in my career, which is 20 years, which is the explosion of consumption production. Consumers have completely changed their relationship with clothes. So, you know, we obviously are not wearing them for long. We're chucking them away very quickly. So we've gone from, you know, a sort of gently polluting textile sector to a grossly gigantic industry which is churning out waste in the most, you know, phenomenal rates. You know, according to Ellen MacArthur Foundation, the equivalent of one dumper truck of textiles is either landfilled or incinerated every second around the world. And so we're in an idiotic outcome or situation where we've, you know, we've taken something that's polluting and then we've kind of put it on steroids.
Christina doesn't think consumers are the only ones responsible for riding the ship, but that doesn't mean that she lets them off the hook for the decisions that they make when it comes to fashion.
You know, there's a hypocrite hiding in all of us, actually, and there's nothing to be ashamed of about that, but it's something that if we want to transform our relationship with the planet and each other, you have to like tap on the shoulder of the hypocrite and go, hey, you, I got you. Like, what are you doing about it? And you don't have to go and start a nonprofit. You don't have to start a social impact business. You could actually just start in your own home and be more accountable to yourself.
Redress wants to empower consumers to be accountable. It's set up clothing collection sites across Hong Kong and opened its own secondhand store, the Redress Closet. But Christina is adamant that the solution cannot just be up to consumers. Other players in the fashion industry have an equally important role to play. So Redress isn't just focused on making it easier for consumers to make smart choices, but also working with designers to give them those choices. She says that one major barrier is that designers simply don't have the scientific background to understand how to make a truly circular garment.
Fashion professionals don't understand basic chemistry, then they don't understand circularity, and they don't understand sustainability. So actually, in all of your big questions about what is sustainability, I'm going to bring it down to chemistry. We at Redress, we've worked with lots of fashion designers around the world, and we try to explain what circularity is. But if they don't understand the difference between a synthetic fiber and a natural fiber, we have a fundamental problem that they don't understand anything. They don't understand the very, very core foundations, the building blocks of the garment that they're trying to produce, then we are really in a bad situation.
Christina says that educating designers about sustainability is incredibly important for achieving a circular economy. Redress produces educational materials and works with fashion institutes and individual designers to teach them the basics. Still, she says that's no easy feat, so Redress has gotten creative.
Education can be quite boring. You know, honestly, who really wants to be educated? Not that many people, because people's attention spans are so short right now. And fashion designers, and I can't speak for them all, but you know, they're creative and they want to create. But do they want to sit there learning about science and chemicals? No, not really. So we try to make it as accessible and as interesting as possible. And one such way that we've tried to sort of ramp it up and like make it more exciting is to peg it to a big sustainable fashion design competition, which is called the Redress Design Award. So essentially the Redress Design Award is a, you know, very consumer focused, very fun, glitzy, sustainable fashion competition, but very much pegged at its very, very core. It's a vehicle to educate the next generation of designers so that they have those core fundamental design principles like under their belt as they enter into the industry.
The awards have been going on for 16 years now, so the very first designers who competed are now making their way up in the fashion industry, ready to transform it. If other players are willing to hire them and put their skills to use, knowing that maybe they'll have to turn the ship around while the consumer is tugging the wheel in the other direction.
If we want to make quick change now, it has to be industry that does it, because you cannot expect consumers to leverage the amount of change that is needed in a short period of time. Even though you can look at forecasts for the fashion industry, the top CEOs will say, oh, the greatest risk to revenue this year, for example, is changing consumer sentiment. So in a twisted way, consumers are in the driving seat because they are the ones with the purses. They are the ones actually dictating the industry. But the problem is, when it comes to sustainability, buying less, wearing for longer, buying more responsibly, etc., the consumers are not in the right driving seat because they're not actually doing the job of transforming the fashion industry to make it more sustainable. So if we want to reduce pollution, it has to be industry that cleans up its act, to use a very sort of cheesy sort of summary.
And Christina says that the industry might not have a choice. Governments are already starting to put regulations in place that directly affect the choices fashion CEOs make. The European Union has been especially aggressive in targeting textile waste. Starting in 2025, all member countries were required to implement clothing collection sites to keep clothes out of household waste. Last summer, the European Parliament finalized rules so that producers of textiles sold in the EU, everything from clothing and footwear to curtains and blankets, have to cover the costs of collecting, sorting, and recycling. And less than 2 weeks before this episode aired, the EU finalized a ban on companies destroying unsold clothing, footwear, and accessories. The EU is a major textile importer, so its regulations impact the textile industry globally. Christina says more is coming, and that even the threat of new legislation is leading to change.
The fashion industry's total annual revenue, 97% of it is generated by 20 fashion brands and groups who have multiple brands. So with that in mind, if we just focused on the top 20 revenue drivers, who probably also therefore are responsible for the most amount of units of production, if those 20 companies, and some of them, many of them, I can't remember how many publicly listed, they are looking at legislation with a fine-tooth comb to be ready for it.
Christina says that this is a huge opportunity for companies looking to innovate. Companies who invest in research and development, or R&D, into, for example, technologies for circular manufacturing, they might have an edge up on those who continue to sail along in the same decades-old lane.
The only way to break business as usual is to invest R&D into the innovations, trademarks, if it's in yours, green chemistry, I don't know anything about that. I mean, R&D should point to competitiveness for a company, right? These are, R&D is not about, you know, being Mother Teresa, nor having, you know, a Nobel Peace Prize, although that would be nice. It's actually about developing innovative products and services that serve the industries, whether that's textile or automobile. The problem is that too often R&D, I think it's very difficult to prove R&D equals ROI, return on investment. But then if we circle back to talking about the amount of legislation that's coming into the industry, then having an R&D budget allocation, which obviously is difficult in today's economic climate, but it's necessary in order to keep up with the externalities that are changing.
The tide is already changing as consumers start demanding more environmentally friendly options, and designers with the know-how to provide those options move up the ranks at fashion brands.
We've had a complete avalanche of complete fast fashion breaks, disappointment, landfills. We know it now. And so that is birthing a kind of new sentiment around timeless quality, durability, longevity. And fashion brands, luxury fashion brands, seem to be using that as a leverage point to further differentiate themselves away from ultra fast. So durability is now king. That's the sexiest thing in fashion.
Substance.
I've always been looking into durable garments. And maybe that's also no surprise because my wife is a designer. So we have always been looking into garments that we think are more sustainable. My name is Dag. It's actually a Scandinavian name. It's very common, especially in Norway, but also Sweden. Yes, very uncommon in Germany. My official job title is Head of Innovation. I'm actually responsible for innovation at the Monomers division. Monomers, for the non-chemists, is actually sort of the basic building block of polymers, also known as plastics. So we are dealing with all the raw materials for the polymers.
Doc Wiebelhaus works for BASF, both investigating new kinds of polymers and also looking for new ways to make already existing ones. Like he just said, plastics are made up of polymers, and so are synthetic fabrics like polyester and polyamides, which are also called nylon. In fact, polyester and the PET in plastic bottles are actually the same material at the chemical level. Much of that fast fashion is made of those synthetic fabrics, which means that those polymers, like other forms of textile waste, are ending up in landfills.
Textile waste, I think, is on everybody's mind. Also, you know the pictures of large textile waste in the Atacama Desert or in Africa. So that's a big topic. About 100 million tons of waste are generated every year. So I think that's something that the industry needs to look into, and that's something where we also try to support with smart chemistry.
According to a Boston Consulting Group analysis, that number was actually closer to 120 million metric tons in 2024. Like we said at the beginning, most of that ended up as garbage, though about 20% or so of it was collected for resale and recycling. of that recyclable portion, less than 1% was actually recycled. Doug's unit at BISF is changing that by making old fabrics new again by recycling them at the molecular level.
I usually use the picture of Lego bricks. So a polymer is a long chain of molecules, so sort of a long stack of Lego bricks, you could say. And then if you want to do recycling, you sort of collect these long chains of Lego bricks. Maybe they are already dirty and maybe some of them are already broken, so you want to renew them. And what you do in chemical recycling, you break those chains down to the individual building blocks. In chemistry, we call them monomers. And in this case, this would be sort of one Lego brick. So you break it down to the individual Lego bricks. Then you clean your Lego bricks. You take out the dirt. You take out the broken ones, for example. And then you reconstruct your polymers. You make your stack again out of those Lego bricks. And then you have a completely new, like virgin chain of Lego bricks. And that's, again, your polymer chain in chemistry.
For almost a year now, BASF has been manufacturing new material for textiles in exactly this way. They take textile waste, break it down into its molecular Lego bricks, and build it back up again to produce a product called Lupamide.
Lupamide is sort of our trade name from BASF side for a recycled polyamide 6 that is based entirely on textile waste.
Polyamide 6, better known as nylon 6, is a common synthetic fiber, though polyester is still used far more frequently. Polyamide 6 is used especially in fabrics for products that need to be tough, durable, and long-lasting. And Lupamide isn't any different from any other kind of polyamide 6.
You can't really tell any difference because the specification and the purity and everything, the molecular structure is completely identical. But the raw material source is a very different one. In the conventional case, you usually build it up from crude oil. What is special about Lupamide, and I would even say unique, is that it's made entirely from textile waste. So we use nothing else, only textile waste, and that's a big difference to other recycled products.
Today, almost all of the tiny number of recycled textiles on the market are actually made from other plastic products. But in the case of Lupamide, it's textiles in, textiles out.
In our case, we really want to close the loop within the same application. So we use textile waste and we regenerate textiles. So that's what we call a closed loop. And the big advantage of a closed loop is that you can do this circle over and over and over again, because you always end up at the same spot and then you can do that again. If you use another type of waste, for example, if you use PET bottles to make a polyester shirt, then this is only one loop and then you are sort of in a dead end. And with our closed loop solution, that is, of course, much more sustainable.
Closed loop manufacturing systems are one of the key tools for creating a circular economy. As soon as a textile is at the end of its life, its fibers can be deconstructed and reconstructed into a new textile. Whether it's a scrap that fell on the cutting room floor during production of a new shirt or a ripped up shirt that's no longer wearable, turning a textile back into a textile generates huge sustainability benefits.
It would actually kill three birds with one stone, right? So reduce the amount of waste, you save natural raw materials, and you also reduce the amount of CO2 emissions at the same time. Because if you build up your polymer chain, your Lego brick chain from crude oil, you have many steps, each of them requiring a lot of energy and effort. And in our case, you only go back one step, and then build it up again, so you have less steps and therefore less energy, less efforts, and therefore less CO2 emissions.
In 2024, BASF put those benefits to work for the fashion industry with a proof-of-concept collaboration with Inditex, the parent company that owns the fashion brand Zara.
The cooperation with Zara is a very exciting story. It was the very first garment that was produced from Lupamide. At that point in time, it was all produced here in Europe, still on more lab and batch scale. So really a huge effort to do all the chemical recycling on our part. Zara also had partners in Spain that actually collected the post-consumer textiles in collection bins and separated, as we discussed, by hand, really manually. So all of that was done in this project for this jacket. And then eventually also what is really cool about the jacket that Zara finally produced and brought to the stores was that this jacket is what we call a one material garment. So this jacket was not only made out of recycled textiles. Usually you would say this the fabric, but in this case it was not only the fabric, but also the lining, the Velcro tapes, the zipper, the buttons, the sewing thread. Everything on this jacket was made out of the same material, all from Lupamed. And that was really cool that Zara could arrange it with all those partners in the value chain. And also it's only possible to do that. And that's something that Zara wanted to prove. It's possible with polyamide. And with other materials, let's say cotton, you would not be able to produce a Velcro tape or a zipper, for example.
The Zara collaboration relied on a European-based effort. And in order to meet growing demands for sustainable products, BASF has since opened a dedicated recycling plant in Shanghai, China. The plant can produce up to 500 metric tons of Lupamed per year and relies on both polyamide 6 waste produced during manufacturing and textile waste collected from consumers. The facility can even handle polyamide 6 mixed with other fibers like elastane. Dag says that the plant is already enabling new fashion partnerships.
We are working with many brands. Yeah, there's a lot of interest in the industry in our material.
For now, we'll have to wait and see what other future products might contain Lupamed. The fact is also that at the moment, recycled textiles are just way more expensive to produce than those made from raw materials. Old clothing needs to be collected and sorted by fabric type. And right now, the only way to do that is by hand. Beyond improved sorting and recycling infrastructure, companies need to invest in scaling existing innovations and coming up with new ones. And for a while, consumers might need to be willing to pay more for recycled materials.
The future availability of Lupamed will strongly depend on the willingness of customers to actually look for recycled materials in the shops. The faster this adoption takes place in the shops, the faster we will scale, because it needs a lot of investment, not only on our side, but as the industry to scale, to get big.
I find it so cheesy and so frustrating and so banal to say everything that you do matters. If we all did a little bit, it would actually add up. And the reason I don't like it is because it sounds so pathetically babyish, but the actual reality is it's quite true.
Companies like BASF have a major role to play in shifting the fashion and textile industry. But anyone can make a difference, whether it's in the choices we make in what we buy, or even in the choices we make in our professional life.
I would really say, and I've been doing this for 20 years, it's a brilliant time to be doing this. And why? Because whether there's regulation tomorrow, next year, or in 5 years, the industry is desperately crawling its way into better practices. And what it needs is innovative thinkers who are collaborative, laterally minded, you know, willing to participate in difficult product development, innovations, whatever you want to call it. And so by and large, I would say, wow, what a great time to start getting into this industry. Because if you can excel, if you can learn, if you can be curious, if you can be kind, my goodness, the doors will open wide for you. Wherever you dip your toe into, the industry would gladly welcome smart thinkers.
All of us can be smarter thinkers when it comes to fashion. Individuals can approach style with intention. Designers can construct with reconstruction in mind. Companies can innovate and chart a course for circularity. The fashion industry may be changing, but that doesn't make it any less important to who we are. Fashion connects the personal to the global. We can harness that connection to build a better world where creativity, style, people, and our environment can all thrive. Next up on Substance, the most famous, or should I say, infamous greenhouse gas, CO2, carbon dioxide. Join us on our next episode as we explore that and more. This has been Substance, stories about the stuff that shapes our world. Substance is a podcast by BASF, produced by Territory Agency, in collaboration with Wake Word and me, Joe Hansen. Research and scripting by Danielle Sedbrook, Claudia Doyle, Hardy Rode, and Joe Hansen.